good evening.
Oh, that's right.
Welcome everyone to the Simple Action Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Grant, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Grant. Hey, Grant.
For those of you who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer.
God.
Grant serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use the restrooms as well as this room. The restrooms are up the hall, kind of diagonally to the left, a little short set of stairs. At this time, please take a look at your cell phones and make sure they're on silent or vibrate or off. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. Our preamble, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic, identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed this evening. And this evening we are discussing step 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood it. And we'd like to please welcome our panel with Casey and Dan. Get to it. First paragraph will be on page 60. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we are alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could ever relieve our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if you were soft.
Take it away.
Hi, my name's Casey. I'm an alcoholic and addict.
Hey, Casey.
So I have a home group, and I have a sponsor, all of the things that are suggested in this program. And I could stand to be a better home group member. How's that? So our description of the alcoholic, the chapters, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. So. Well, when I first came in, you know, and I read that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, like my only real reaction to that was, you think, you know? it wasn't like some huge, significant, are you telling me? Okay. Discovery that my life was in shambles and that I couldn't control my drinking. But I have to be honest with you, I had no real desire to not drink. I just would not. I just wanted to not end up in handcuffs. I would like to be able to show up at a job. But managing our own lives, my life at that point was really just in and out of jails. And it was always stupid stuff like driving on a suspended license for like the 14th offense. And I was very fortunate that I rarely got caught for the things that I was actually doing. But I did hold a whole lot of prejudices against the times that I got caught for the simple things that I was doing. But the fact that no human power could have relieved our alcoholism, it took me 9 months of coming in and out of that program to really test that theory. You know, at first it was obvious that I had a problem with alcohol and that I couldn't manage my own lives, but I was not convinced that I couldn't control it, especially after I had like 3 days to 3 weeks of resting up, you know, and I felt better, and suddenly like the immediate problems were off of my back, and clearly I didn't have very high goals for myself, like keeping a job, owning a car, or anything like that. I just felt better. But it took me a long time to really get to the place where I was beginning to see that I was completely and totally not in control of my drinking, which is very strange because I'm a low bottom drunk, and I, you know, I was homeless. It was just pathetic, the shape that I was living in, and for me to, you know, you'd think that I would be like, absolutely, I can't control this. But somewhere in this alcoholic mind of mine, I thought that I could. And maybe it wasn't that I was thinking that I could, it's just that I really wanted to. I don't know the difference. And that God could and would if he were sought. And when I finally came in and I woke up one day and I was just so tired. I don't even know how to explain it. It wasn't any day different than another. I owed people money. I was almost out of alcohol. I didn't have any cigarettes. It's like 6 o'clock in the morning. I haven't been to bed since I don't remember when. But just for some reason, I just said the most honest prayer that I've ever said, which was, God, please help me. Because something just came over me, and I don't want to say that I was suicidal, but I just had this clear-cut thought without any reservation that I just did not want to live this way anymore. And I felt absolutely no sorrow to that decision, and I just basically said, help me. And I just knew at that point, if I couldn't get help, then I would probably start to, actually I knew exactly what I was going to do, but I don't want to say it out loud in case somebody doesn't know. I'm always afraid that like, I didn't know if you took a whole bunch of Tylenol that you could probably send your liver into shutdown, but I had figured it out like a week before this, and I was like, it's that easy. But I don't really know how easy it is, but that was my plan, is an easily accessible bottle of Tylenol. I don't know where that came from. I think it was just a very small sliver of grace and was that incomprehensible demoralization. And that's all I got.
Hey, my name's Dan. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Dan.
I also have a sponsor, and I have a home group too, and it's 49th Street Living Sober. It meets on Thursdays at 5:30 at the Ignite Norfolk building on 49th Street across from ODU. So if y'all want to come check it out, it's a great meeting. Yeah, you know, this part where it's talking about the description of the alcoholic and everything, making it clear, I think when they're talking about our personal adventures before and after, I think maybe they're talking about what they're describing in their book. I think of my own personal adventures, you know, before and after, like before coming into AA and then after coming into AA for the first time, you know, coming in and out for a couple of years, because that's what finally made these three ideas clear to me. You know, I didn't come in here in the first day, and you know, well, I didn't pick up a white chip on the first day either, I don't think, because I didn't think I was an alcoholic and I didn't think I needed any help with any of this. But even if I had, you know, it, you know, but it's because I didn't know what any of this meant. You know, I didn't understand it, and I didn't want to understand it because I didn't think it applied to me. And I thought I was okay, and you know, I could go back out and try it a different way, and try my drinking a different way, and it would work out all right. And you know, after I would come back in, and I would go back out, and I would drink again, and I would black out, and I would drive drunk, or I would do something else stupid, and I'd get in trouble, or something else would get worse, or I'd get arrested. Well, actually, the time I got arrested was what sent me into AA the first time. For being drunk in public, for trying to walk back from the bar and laying on this lady's lawn stargazing. And she tried to get me to get up and leave, and I threw my phone, and then she didn't actually call the cops. Someone else ended up calling the cops. And so then I was running around in the middle of the street, and you know, I got take it to the drunk tank. So that was what brought me in here the first time for, you know, the judge told me to get my charge dismissed. I need to come to AA. And, you know, my dad has been in AA for a long time, over 20 years. And, you know, but I didn't understand what any of this was. I didn't know what AA was. I thought it was just, you know, a bunch of people that sat around and, like, talked about their old drinking stories. And that is part of, you know, like, we do talk about our drinking stories like I just did. But, you know, that's not it. You know, that's not all we do. You know, but that's kind of what I thought. You know, I had gone to a couple meetings when I was a kid, you know. And just my dad took me along to, you know, so he didn't have to get a babysitter. And, you know, he just took me. And so that's all I thought it was. I thought it was just sitting around telling stories. And, you know, I was like, oh, that's cool. They seem all right. But, you know, it didn't seem to be effective for, like, what I was experiencing. And, you know, because I wasn't doing it. I didn't try the, you know, the 12 steps right away, or I didn't get a sponsor right away, or any of that. So, you know. And I, you know, eventually I figured out, I was like, okay, I'm not drinking like a normal person. Normal people don't do this. And, you know, but I still was like, well, I don't know what else to do. Like, the drinking was really the only solution I had for anything that was going on in my life. So, you know, or any of my emotions even, you know, like, even if it was if I was happy, I didn't know how to deal with that. If I got a really good grade on an exam, I had to, you know, go out and celebrate because I didn't know how to deal with that feeling either. It wasn't just, you know, I mean, certainly when I was depressed or I was, you know, angry, then I would try and, you know, medicate those emotions with alcohol. But it was positive emotions too. It didn't really matter. I didn't know how to handle any of it. And, you know, I didn't come in here an atheist or anything. I definitely believed in God. I just wished, you know, I was like, well, God can, when I need something from God, I will ask him. But otherwise, I would like for him to leave me alone and I can do what I want. You know, like, that was pretty much my philosophy about God. And, you know, I did go to church and everything, and I had this group that I was involved with, but it didn't matter, you know. None of that was, you know, enough, because I didn't have that relationship with a higher power. I just had this idea of, you know, okay, God is, you know, whatever, he's doing his own thing. You know, he doesn't really, he just needs to, like, if we both stay in our lanes, we'll be fine. And that was kind of what I thought about it. You know, like, God, stay in your lane, you know. But that's... That's not really a good attitude to have if I'm trying to get sober and do this program. And so eventually I was convinced otherwise. And, you know, I also thought that human powers could relieve my alcoholism at first. You know, I thought, like, oh, if I can get this girl, like, there was this one girl, you know, I'd known her since middle school. And I was like, if me and her get together, then I won't need to drink so much, because it'll be a great, and I don't know what gave me this idea, because it would have been a, like, train wreck. Like, I understand that now. This would have been an absolute train wreck. But in my alcoholic mind, I was thinking, no, this will be great, and then, you know, we can do this, and, you know, I won't need to drink as much, because I'll have this in my life, I'll have her in my life, and, you know, which isn't really a healthy way to view a relationship either, but, you know, that's not surprising. But, you know, eventually, all this stuff kind of faded away, and I was just left with, you know, what am I going to do about the drinking? Because it was just getting worse every time I would come in here and then I would go back out. It wasn't getting any better. Nothing what I've tried was working at all. And so I was finally convinced otherwise, and, you know, I finally got the idea through my head that, oh, hey, maybe God will, and maybe the people in AA will help me that have, you know, stayed sober for a long time, or any amount of time, you know, longer than a couple months, which was all I could do, really. And so then, yeah, that's all I got for now. Thanks.
Right on. So we're still on page 60. Being convinced, we were at step 3. Which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits.
So I tell you, this step three has taken on a lot of forms for me, and I think that's just probably because I'm a slow learner. I think it was always the same. I was the one that had comprehension issues. So in the beginning, turn my will and my life over to God, and that was pretty simple because my life was like 7 court dates coming up, kicked out of the house that I lived in, didn't have a car, going through a custody battle, not completely able to stay sober. Having all of those situations, like my sponsor told me when I first came in that like the only thing that I needed to do each day was to take care of my sobriety, and everything in my life was completely up in the air. And for some reason, it was up in the air, and I noticed it, and I'm pretty sure it's because I stopped taking alcohol in my body, but it was way different sober than when I was getting inebriated every day. It was a little bit harder to handle. So, turning my will and my life over to God, I struggled with it at moments. You know, I had a lot of fight in me. I did a lot of terrible things, but I also put myself in positions to be harmed. You know, I put... particularly one example of that is that I got a DUI spinning donuts in a field with a bunch of neighborhood kids, and I went to jail that day for the DUI, and my daughter, the courts got temporary custody of my daughter while I served my 27 days. Well, they kept taking me to court for this lady that didn't speak English, and I kept getting failure to appear, so my 27 days turned into almost 5 months. Granted, no one would take my phone calls because they were tired of me. No one believed that I wouldn't actually have more charges and be in there for something else. But I had this huge resentment against the courts because I lost custody because of them, not because of me. And so I had all of these battles and all of these struggles, and it took a long time for me to realize. My dad used to always tell me, where there's smoke, there's fire. I kind of get what he means by that now. But basically, had I not been inebriated spinning donuts with a dually with all these kids running around me, I would have never gotten a DUI that day, and I wouldn't have placed myself in a position to let the judicial system dictate whether or not I should be a parent. And that was a pretty large pill to swallow. But when I had these types of obstacles in my life saying, okay, God, it's your business, was challenging, but it wasn't nearly as challenging as when I'm throwing up how I'm going to behave at work. And I didn't know that at the time, you know. And so, you know, when you're facing like jail time, you're like, whatever your will is, God. And you know, deep down inside, I'm like, I've been good. I got 5 months sober. This is going to go my favor, because if it doesn't, then I'm going to lose this, and I'm going to lose that, and I'm going to lose this. I got the time. I totally went to jail. I was like about 5 minutes in the jail cell, like saying nasty words in front of God's name. But I could hear my sponsor, you know, like, God's in charge. God's in charge. And truth be told, if I hadn't have been in that particular place at that particular time, in hindsight, looking back, my life really would not have stacked up to the place that it's at today, which is way more than I could ever have dreamed it would be. So I didn't know when I was saying, okay, I turn my will over to you, you know, and my life over to you. I really couldn't fully grasp what that was because I was so out of touch with what an actual life was. And so I feel like I'm kind of like a kid relearning these things, because it's after getting all of those materialistic and household type items in check and under my belt, I'm thinking like I'd had arrived or something. But I hadn't. What all I had done is managed to do what everybody else in society does every day. I thought I had made it somewhere. But that's when the beginning of turning my will and my life over to my higher power really started to come into play for me, because I don't know how to interact with other people in a kind, considerate way. It's funny that it says here, but as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. When I first read this paragraph, I picked out the ones that I was, period. There wasn't really, and it was always the nice ones. I liked the way you'd be ever graceful. Like, that was me, like, in my head. But really, I was like a bull in a china shop in every area of my life, and I was completely incapable of taking anyone else's feelings, schedule, time into consideration. Everything I did self-seekingly, and I had no idea.
Yeah, I had no idea what step three was either. You know, like, I just, when people would read it at the beginnings of meetings, or I would see it on the lawn, I'd be like, turn my will and my life over to God. no, I'm not doing it, because, and I didn't, I never got to this point. I had like four different sponsors in 2 years I was coming in and out of here, and I never got to this part in the book. We would always read through the first couple steps, and then I'd start feeling better, or someone would invite me to a party, or whatever would happen. You know, there was always something that happened that would be a good enough excuse in my head for me to go back out and drink. And so, I would use this as an excuse. I'd be like, well, I'm not turning my will. I sort of accepted the first two steps. I was like, okay, yes, maybe I have a drink, you know, problem with my drinking. Maybe I can't control that, and my life is pretty unmanageable. You know, I'm not doing a great job with life right now. And I do believe in God. Maybe God can help me out with this, but I'm not turning my, you know, like, I have free will. Like, isn't God supposed to give us free will so we can do what we want? You know, isn't that the whole point? Why am I going to go turn around and give it back to him? And, you know, I would have this theological debate in my head about it and not even ask anyone else what step three was about, or get to this part in the book maybe with a sponsor and read, because it's going to explain to me what it's talking about when it says this. But I would just rather, you know, analyze it in my own head and find some excuse why it's not going to work for me, or I don't need to do it. So, yeah, I definitely ran my life on self-will. I think even when I was a kid, it probably got worse once I actually started physically taking in alcohol, you know, once I turned 18. And, I don't know, like, it's saying, like, my motives definitely weren't good most of the time. You know, sometimes they were. I'm not going to say I was 100% bad person, but I was always usually out for myself. If I could help someone else along the way, great. But if I was going to do something for someone else and I wasn't going to get anything in return for myself, then I probably wasn't going to do it. Probably not going to happen. And, I wasn't a jerk all the time. I wasn't mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest 100% of the time. A lot of the time I was. But, you know, if I was trying to get what I wanted and I needed to be, you know, patient, probably not, but maybe generous or kind or considerate, I could probably do those some of the time, or I could fake it so I could get what I wanted out of the person, you know, or the situation or whatever it might be, you know. So it was pretty varied sometimes, but I probably leaned more towards the egotistical and selfish, I would say, if I'm being honest about my past and looking back on it. And I really thought if people would do what I thought was right, then, you know, well, I didn't really care about if their lives would be better, but my life would definitely be better. And so that was what, you know, was most important to me. Life, you know, I thought life would be wonderful. You know, if my parents would lay off about the drinking and, you know, just let me do my thing and, you know, just not make such a big deal about it. Or, you know, just if I was in college, if the school wasn't so, you know, kept telling me I was gonna, you know, I wasn't doing my work, I was gonna have to deal with all this, if they would just, you know, lay off, you know, this is college, I'm supposed to have a good time, you know, get off my back about these grades, you know. And that's how I was with everything. I just, you know, I wanted everyone to kind of back off, you know, let me run my life, even though I was, you know, definitely affecting other people's lives in a negative way, you know, definitely my family. You know, I remember one time my mom called me one night after work and I was out drinking. She kind of called me out on it. She was like, Daniel, you're drinking. And she was like, are you drinking? And she was like, you're drinking, aren't you? And I was like, I got mad and hung up and went to go live at my friend's house. And I was living with them at the time, with my parents. Did not tell them where I was going. Cut off my phone. Got a new phone. You know, they had no idea where I was for like a week or 2 weeks. And this is right around Christmas time, you know. And I just left and went to go live with my friend because I was sick. You know, I just wanted to drink how I wanted, and, you know, screw this, you know, I'm out of here. And so that's one of the most selfish things I can recall of, you know, me doing, because I just didn't think about, you know, how much that would affect them or hurt them or anything. It was just all about me, and it was all about, you know, me drinking the way I wanted to. And that was what was consuming my mind, and, you know, there wasn't really room for any of that other stuff about, you know, compassion or empathy or, you know, whatever. You know, I wasn't processing that at the time. And, you know, then I came back on Christmas because I knew I had presents there. So I came on Christmas to get my presents, and then I left again, you know. that's the best example I can think of about this, you know, this whole running the show and being selfish is that situation. And so, you know, there were plenty of other examples. I don't have time to get into them all, but, you know, the bottom line is this exactly describes how I live my life. It was always about me. I was always looking out for myself, and you know? And I didn't even realize it some of the time. Like, I didn't even realize what I was doing some of the time. And that doesn't excuse it, but I was just, you know, that I was just so used to it. I was so used to it that I didn't know that it was not normal, that other people actually thought of other people a lot of the time, did things for other people. You know, that wasn't really, you know, I mean, I did do things for other people, you know, but it wasn't a, you know, primary motivation in my life. I'll just say that. And so, you know, but it's crazy how, you know, the steps in the program will change your perspective on all this. So I'll pass it on.
All right, we'll continue on page 61. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is the basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony?
Well, clearly my show didn't go off very well very often, so it was my family hadn't spoken to me. They joke now, they say that I went on a K-station. I hadn't talked to my family my father, I had kept in touch with my daughter, but for some time, evidently, when I finally did decide to get sober, I was a year older than I thought I was. I had missed a birthday, and I was appalled that nobody called. they were appalled that I didn't know I had missed a birthday. But yeah, this is this most definitely describes me my entire life, and like when I really want to think about it, like my character defects really stem from this paragraph, and I didn't know it when I first came in here, but this applies to me at any given second of any given day. I have like this small prayer that I say that's like my step 3 prayer, which is just, God, show me how I'm supposed to show up, because I don't particularly know how to do that 90% of the time. But I can say that it's pretty clear what I shouldn't do, and so that enables me, that small prayer, to open up a door just long enough to hear this small voice that says, "Keep your mouth shut," you know. I was really wanting to run every show that I could possibly run from the very get-go. Like, I was a leader in sports, and, you know, and some of our, you know, greatest assets can also, you know, be our greatest failures. So what I'm learning through the grace of God is how to manage these in a way that that is really and genuinely helpful to those around me. Because what I really want is to be of service and to be kind and to be things that, left on a daily basis, I really don't know how to genuinely act like. And I remember this lady told me one time, I wanted to do something for someone, and she's talking about checking your motives, you know. Well, like, I always have to ask myself, am I doing it so I'll look good? Am I doing it so they'll feel a certain way about me? Or am I doing it with absolutely zero reservation at all? And for about the next 6 months, I couldn't do anything that I wanted to do. I was like, wow, I don't do anything nice for any good reason other than myself. But I do remember specifically the one time that I wanted to do something kind for someone, and I had absolutely no reservation whatsoever of getting something out of it, or trying to manipulate the way someone felt about me, or to make myself look good or put together. I can say that, is he not a delusion of... a victim of delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well. Boy, was that a delusion for me. You know, I got a couple of years sober. I've had a couple of years sober before. And as I said before, I was always on a mission to obtain these materialistic things and to fix these broken relationships that I have done through my alcoholism. And it isn't really, I have to tell you, until the last 2 years that I realized that that's only the beginning. You know, and that left to my own devices, whether I drink or not, I can destroy those things that I've gotten. And so it, I didn't do it consciously. And you know, they always have that saying where they say, you know, you need every drink that you took, you know, and I really, like, I tell you, it's difficult to come in here ever, but to come in here numerous times with a couple of years of sobriety is just, you know, after losing it, it's just, it's extremely humbling. But what I really learned from those experiences is that clearly drinking wasn't my problem, you know, because when I first came in, I was riddled with alcoholism. You know, I shook, I had DTs, you know, and then here, you know, when I come back after a month long relapse, you know, and I've managed to lose just about everything that I put together, I'd just be on a fast track mission to get my dad to talk to me again, to get my daughter to talk to me again, to get my job back, to get the car back, to get whatever it was I lost back. And what I know now is that managing well doesn't have anything to do with financial material success at all for me. You know, managing well, somebody told me when I first came in that the softest pillow is a clear conscience. You know, to be able to go through the day and when I do my inventory at night, you know, whether it's a great inventory and, you know, I didn't act like a total schmuck that day or not, just being able to be honest about and to clearly look at my behavior and have a willingness to do better the next day and to genuinely care how I act and behave in society. So yeah, I don't want to snatch everything that I can get out of the show anymore. But left to my own devices, which means if I'm breathing, that's what I'm going to do. So turning my will and my life over to a higher power is like a constant, like minute by minute, day by day, moment by moment, situation by situation practice that I have to do. And I'm really thankful that this program has given me the tools to do that, you know, and that the doors have always been open for me to come back in, for me to realize that drinking is just a symptom of my problem. So,
yeah. Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? You know, like, I didn't understand why nobody, like, got it. Like, they didn't know that, you know, I wanted this or I wanted things this way. Like, why can't you see that it would be better this way, you know? Better for me, you know? And it's just, like, that was the way I thought about things, you know? It's, like, I didn't understand why no one else could figure it out and get on the team and just be a team player, you know? Just be a team player on Team Dan. And everything will be great, you know? And we'll all drink together and have a great time, except that's never the way it turned out, but that's the way it was supposed to be in my head. And, you know, a lot of times my actions did make people want to retaliate, and a lot of times the retaliation was they didn't want to have anything to do with me anymore, and they didn't want to talk to me, and they didn't want me asking them for favors or whatever, or living with them, or whatever the case may be. And, I was like, okay, and I would just move on to the next person, next group, or whatever. And it didn't really matter to me. I guess I would admit sometimes when I was at fault, like when it was really obvious. But even when I got arrested, I tried to put it off on the cops. I was like, well, those cops totally overreacted. I wasn't, I was just, you know, they could have just let me go home. I wasn't doing anything. You know, I wasn't going to do anything. And, you know, I just justified it that way, or, you know, I would tell my parents, I'd be like, look, this isn't my fault. This is, you all raised me a certain way, and, you know, that's why I'm drinking like this. And I really believed that in my head, and my dad would call me out on it and be like, you're trying to manipulate me right now. And I'd be like, he's like, I know what you're trying to do. And I'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about, because in my head, I wasn't, you know, this is what I really believed. Like, I'd convinced myself that this is, so I didn't have to take responsibility for anything that happened, that whatever the chaos I was causing. And, you know, that's just was my defense against, you know, having to honestly look at all the damage I was doing and all the people I was hurting, was that it wasn't, you know, none of it was on me. It was always on somebody else or something else or some institution or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this part where it's talking about a producer of confusion rather than harmony, it makes me think of, I was at this party with my friend and his girlfriend, and you know, the party wasn't that exciting to me, so I decided to, I got it in my head that I was going to provoke this argument between them. And I actually did. I actually ended up provoking this because I was bored. I was bored, and I ended up, like, provoking this. Like, I was like, well, this is how I'm going to do it. I'm going to say this to him, and then just because it wasn't like, you know, I just wanted some excitement. I didn't care, you know, I didn't care about their relationship. I just wanted to be entertained. That's the bottom line, and that's, like, that's exactly what it's talking about here, trying to arrange the lights, the ballet. Like, I was trying to put on this show for myself or whatever, and that's, like, that's really messed up, you know, and I realize that now, but at the time, that was just the, you know, the operating, you know, that was what was going on with me, and that was the way it was, and, you know, it took me coming in here and working the steps with the sponsor and you know, doing all the other things that are suggested and showing up here and talking to you guys to figure out that that's not okay. You know, that's not appropriate behavior. You know, when I'm alcoholic and I'm still actively drinking, that seems like a great idea. That seems like a lot of fun. And so that's why it's so important for me to, that, and I know that I need to, you know, have my, you know, I, the fact that I accept that, you know, that was something that was wrong and that, you know, needs, I need to make amends for, and that's not okay. Is that, you know, I've made progress in here. Because when I first got in here, I would try to, probably try to justify that, believe it or not. I would try to justify anything. So the fact that I'm not trying to do that now, and I'm accepting that, you know, I made a lot of mistakes, and, you know, I was out for myself a lot of the time, is, you know, as proof that the program does work, and I need to keep doing it. So, thanks.
All right, we'll be on page 62. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us have moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would like to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own willpower. We had to have God's help.
So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. Like I said, this is like everything in this program is like a twofold lesson for me, because, you know, when I first came in, and I always like to say this because in case there are newcomers in the room, that like all of my troubles were basically of my own making. It was so blatantly obvious, but yet I had so many defenses, just as Dan was just saying a while ago. There were 1,001 stories. And I could recall any one of them. And I also, it's kind of funny because I had all of these lies, right? Like there was all these gray areas. And like sometimes still when I tell a story, like I'll tell the lie and I'm like, oh no, wait, that was a lie. But I just told them over and over so many times that like I really had begun to have a hard time differentiating the truth from the false, you know? And so, yeah, it was totally obvious that all of my problems, you know, like especially after doing a four-step, were of my own making, but that I'm really beginning to see that more now after a lot of that collateral damage is behind me, and that it usually does. My problems arise out of myself, because let's be real, I have a driver's license and a job and a place to live, and in comparison to 5 years ago, like that's like the penthouse, you know. But yet I can still spend afternoons where I just have this horrible uncomfortableness inside of me that I'm completely incapable of being grateful for the blessings that I have in my life, or just the fact that I have one at all, which is a miracle in itself. You know, and what that is the wheels turning in my head, you know, just spinning and spinning and spinning and spinning, and days that I don't take the time to sit down and ask God to direct my thinking, you know, and just to direct my actions and have me show up in a way that he would like for me to show up. I mean, it's quite obvious in the way that I feel at the end of the day. You know, later as you go through the book, you learn about these emotional hangovers and, you know, and all of these, and I can just completely ruin any perfect day. Just give me the slightest opportunity, and for some reason, if it's gray outside, it makes it a lot easier to do that. I don't know why, but so I have learned through basically every way of not relying on my higher power that I could not reduce my self-centeredness by wishing or trying it away, period, and that I have to have God's help. And I didn't, you know, like, you all have told me that over and over and over and over again. And while I was riding that, you know, pink cloud of getting success and material things back, you know, my first couple years of sobriety, I couldn't wrap my mind around the idea that all of my troubles from that point forward were going to be of my own making. You know, I was also under this delusion, too, that I wasn't supposed to have any troubles. You know, like, it's perfectly okay to not be okay. I had no idea. You know, it's not the end of the world. You know, it's okay to just not feel great that day. You know, take care of your responsibilities, be kind and loving, and go home and lay on the couch and binge watch some Netflix. You know what I mean? It's actually quite the privilege. You know, and I didn't know that. You know, so, like, we talk about these, was it that we have these philosophical convictions galore, you know, and that was one of my convictions, is that everything needed to be okay all the time, you know, and but really all that is just a testament to how completely lacking I was to handle any type of emotion other than anger. I'm very skilled in that one, you know, but outside of that, you know, if I wasn't angry or I wasn't happy, I had no idea how to be, you know, and so I do need God's help. I need God's help on how to handle being happy. I need God's help on how to handle being grateful or thankful or sad. And I mean, the truth of the matter is I've spent the majority of my life drinking and abusing drugs and alcohol. I'm probably like the emotionally developed as a snail, probably. And then, like, I'm surprised why I get overwhelmed, you know, but it's okay to be overwhelmed. But the whole point for me is that each day that I wake up, that I really am seeking for God to show me how He'd like for me to show up in this world. And when I align my will with His will, the things go pretty smoothly, you know, and typically His will is for me to stop thinking about myself. Go do something for someone else. You know, if I do the simple things in this program that the tools that they've given me, show up in meetings, talk to 3 alcoholics a day, you know, be of service to other people. I don't have very much time for all the other stuff, and it usually dissipates. So, but I have to open up the door to be willing. And I do want to say this in the very beginning, that God to me meant good, orderly direction. I had a lot of, prejudices against the church. My mom was like, or is an evangelical Christian. Mm-hmm. And so I have a lot of prejudices against, or I had, against her faith and growing up in that environment. And I carried those here into the program. And every time you guys started talking about God, I just completely tuned out. But what I know is when I first came in and I was living in an Oxford house and I really didn't know what to do. Like, you know, like my sponsor, you know, I would say, okay, well, call me in the morning. And I'm like, okay, this is what I got. And I'm like, I need to get custody of my kid. I need to get a job. I need to, and she was like, well, have you showered? You know, no. And she's like, well, why don't you shower and do 3 loads of laundry and call me back? You know, and so, good orderly direction is exactly what I needed, and that's the way that I was able to relinquish my will enough to start to look for direction in my life, you know, and it kind of still remains the same for me today.
Yeah, I definitely was an extreme example of self-will run riot, and I still can be if I'm not working this program on a daily basis. I can go right back to just taking control of the steering wheel and trying to run my own life, and you still doesn't go well at all, just like it used to not go well at all. And so and then I realized that, but now I have this option to come back here and do what I'm supposed to be doing. And but I didn't think so. I thought I was a great person for a lot of the time when I was drinking, except towards the end I started to get some, you know, feelings that, okay, maybe I'm not such a, you know, maybe this is all wrong, or, you know, maybe I'm not who I built myself up to be in my head. But I really did think I was a pretty, you know, regardless of all this stuff I was doing, I didn't think I was incredibly selfish. I was like, look at all these nice things I do, you know, I do go and do this service work or whatever, which I did, but, you know, there was always something in it for me now that I look back at it, you know, whether I was trying to go there to pursue a woman that I was interested in. Which I did. I went on the service trip to Kentucky, and one of the reasons I did was because there were several girls I found attractive, and I wanted to go and you know, spit game, basically. And, you know, that's not a selfish reason to do that. You know, I wasn't going to, oh, I'm going to help the, I like, I told myself, you know, I was like, oh yeah, that's why, you know, look what a good person I am. But, so, it's definitely selfish behavior, a lot of it. And I did have moral convictions, you know, I knew what was right and wrong, but I kind of operated in the gray area where I could, like I was saying before, justify stuff, at least in my own head, even if no one else was buying it. And usually people weren't, certainly not my parents, but as long as it was, I got the green light in my head, that was good enough for me, and I was going to go ahead and do what I wanted to do. And, you know, I do remember one time that I knew something was wrong right when I did it, and it was, so the guy who plays the Flash, Grant Gustin, he went to my high school, and I found this guy online who was looking to buy a yearbook from my high school that had Grant Gustin in it. And I didn't have this yearbook, but my friend did. And so I was like, hey, can I borrow your yearbook? And so I did. I borrowed the yearbook. But then I was like, no, I can't do that. And I left it somewhere for her to come pick it up. And weeks went by, and she never came and got it. It was just sitting there, and I'd see it all the time. And I was like, man, that's money right there. That's easy money. And then so finally, I just went and took it, and I sent it to the guy and got my money. And right after I did it, I knew it was wrong. I knew I shouldn't have done that. And I knew that was really, you know, it wasn't mine. It was my friend's, and she had, you know, like people had wrote her messages in there and stuff. You know, it was a personal thing. And, you know, I just went off and – so right after that, I went and took the money and got drunk because – because I didn't know how to deal with any, like, I knew, like, I couldn't actually justify this one because it was really pretty black and white that what I did was not morally acceptable, even in my own head. So, you know, then I just went and got and blacked out and didn't have to think about it anymore. But I will say, though, that, you know, my ninth step, my amends, I was able to reach out to this guy, and I explained to him the whole situation and everything, and he actually allowed me to buy back the yearbook and send it back to me. So now I actually have the opportunity to give that back to my friend, you know, when I end up, when we meet up and do that. So that's proof that, and I didn't do that, you know, and I know that wasn't just me, you know, I believe that my higher power has helped me out with that, and, you know, that I was able to get this back and, you know, and make something right. And that's just one of the awesome things that's happened, you know, when I'm working the steps and, you know, trying to do the right thing, that, you know, I do get some help along the way. So I'm grateful for that. Thanks.
All right, we'll be on page 62. So this is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had us quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom.
I'm a little slow, so it was like, first of all, I had to realize I was playing God. That took about 5 years. But absolutely, we had to quit playing God, which for me is just opening myself up to some new ideas. And God speaks to me through all sorts of people, places, and things. And I am incredibly blessed to have some really awesome, strong, loving, honest women in my life that I can completely look up to, that have for several years encouraged me to broaden my relationship with my higher power, and I didn't, but I did watch them, but they were planting seeds, and for now, which I'm hoping to be watering, but me playing God left me homeless and with DTs and without custody of my child and without a job and completely hopeless. And sadly, I absolutely, positively hated myself. I had absolutely zero self-worth when I walked in these doors, and I did not understand why everyone was so happy to see me. It was awkward. I just felt really, really dirty inside. But the proof of that is that all of the men and women in these room are his agents, and it's quite obvious. And so, like, mostly what I have learned about this program, about relationships of higher power, I learned by watching my higher power in my own life, but most certainly in other people's lives. My sponsor had me do this excellent exercise when I first got sober and write down these little things called God shots, you know, these small insignificant moments that you probably won't remember some other time later. And I mean, they're actually kind of creepy, you know, really, but like, whoa, you know. And so, but what is funny, you know, when they were happening to me, I really felt like I would never forget them, but I do, because I can go back and read my God shots, and I really can, some of them, I can't even recall them happening, and I'm so thankful that I wrote them down. But absolutely, God is going to be my director, you know. And I'm thankful, like, and I struggle with this. He is the Father, we are his children. I can just hear my mom speaking in tongues, like, oh my gosh, you know, like, so having to reject, like, this prejudice that I have against, or am working on not having against, organized religion, and realize that this is really about my own experience and my own higher power, and that sentence there, you know, for a long time just kind of made me shiver. I don't, it's the wording. I'm like, is that the King James Version? That's what I used to think to myself sitting in meetings. But it's actually the truth, you know, because I absolutely do have a higher power that I look up to. And these simple ideas are the keystone of the new and triumphant arch, which I am passing through to freedom. And I will say that freedom today to me means something completely different than it means when you're wanted. I genuinely have freedom. I have freedom from all of the negative, evil, deceitful things that I did in the open and in private while I was drinking and using drugs. And, you know, and I have freedom from guilt, and I have freedom from shame. Mm-hmm. And I have, you know, freedom from financial insecurity, even though I have to remind myself of that one sometimes. I'm just really thankful for this program. I'm babbling now, so I'm gonna pass.
Yeah, you know what I had to come to realize was that it can't be me. You know, I can't. I'm not qualified to have this responsibility of deciding everything for myself and deciding what's good and bad and what I should be doing and how I should be running my life. Like, because I did such a bad job of it. You know. It's like, I don't know, I just think about it this way. Like, if I'm a football player and they've got me back there returning punts, and I keep fumbling the punts, I fumble 6 punts in 2 games, they're not going to let me return the punts anymore. They're going to take me out, and they're going to have some other guy do it because I keep turning it over and giving it to the other team on the 10-yard line or whatever. But I can still contribute to the team in other ways. You know, maybe I get on the field and I go run down there and tackle the other punt returner on special teams, or maybe I'm a wide receiver and I get on and catch some passes, but I can't be returning the punt, and it's not up to me. You know, the coach is the one who decides, and, you know, God's the coach. And when I was running my life and drinking, I was the coach. I was trying to be the coach, general manager, the owner, and whoever else, the entire team. I was trying to be all of it, and it doesn't work. You know, I'm just one of the 53 guys on the roster, and I just have to, you know, do my job and think how I can help my other teammates. It's not my job to, you know, oversee and run everything. You know, that's God. You know, he's up there, and I'm, you know, I have my place on the totem pole, and, you know, but I can still contribute, and I can still be helpful and, you know, help other people and show up. But, you know, it's I can't be back there returning those punts because I'll fumble them every time, you know. And that's it. That's just how I think about it. That's all I got. Thanks.
All right, we're a little out of time. So I'll read this last reading. We won't share on it. Page 63. We were now at step 3. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him.
first this one.
Can we just thank these wonderful people again? We have a seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting in declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Okay.
Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd just like to get your first name, so maybe we might welcome you.
Hi, I know a lot of you already.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Anna. Welcome.
There is literature available on the table over there. Please see any home group member after the meeting if you'd like to purchase a book. And if it's real thin paper that you can fold and stick in your pocket, you can take it for free. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt cans provided outside and stay well away from the church door. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, one more time, let's just thank them. If you all don't mind, just giving us a hand to clean up after the meeting. And all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the stuff discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, which is right down the street, 21st and Colonial. And would there be a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs? Well, I saw David's hand first this time.
I defer.
Defer to Sarah?
Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Sarah.
Whose Father?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom,